Good afternoon, folks. Welcome to 2011 version of Warbirds in Review. And we're about to round up for the week here, but we're very fortunate today. We have, we're emphasizing T-34s, T-34A, and a T-34B. We have a lot of folks going to be here today. General Ingalls is going to be here in just a few minutes, and he flew the T-34 in pilot training. And General Boyd here flew the T-34A in pilot training also, and they know how much superior it is to the B model, so we'll let them talk about that. Actually, there's not that much difference. I've owned two of them, and I can't tell the difference except one has nose wheel steering and the other one doesn't. And one you can move the pedals and the other one you can't. But anyway, after that, hopefully that we're going to have Bud Day here. And with that being said, we have books over here that General Ingalls is going to sign, and if Bud Day is here, he will sign them. And also, if we have anything over there for you to sign, General Boyd, just go ahead right over and sign it. Now, while I'm talking about that, before we get started on the program, we have some DVDs there that are over here, and it's called Missions That Changed the War. You may have seen them on the military channel. There's one about Doolittle, Germany's Last Ace, and also the Flying Tigers. Now, they're for sale over there. They're on sale today. I can't tell you what they're on sale for, but it's just today only. So they're over there in the Warbirds also. But for the first 20 minutes of this, we're going to have these T-34 experts, and Jeff probably is the T-34 experts as far as modifications and keeping them airworthy. But Harold Cannon here is one of our Warbird directors. He also owns a T-34, and he's going to do that moderation. In the meantime, I'll talk to you in about 20 minutes. Oh, by the way, we'll have a question and answer system at the end of this, not between them.
Hi, guys. My first Oshkosh was about 16 years ago. I came, I stood out here, watched people land for an hour and a half. Hear me now, Smitty? Good. And watched my first T-34 take off and do a formation routine. And it cost me a lot of money since then. But it's been a great experience. General Boyd, I'd like for you to tell us a little bit. Now, this gentleman is a T-34 owner as well, but he did his primary flight training in the military in a T-34. Tell us about that.
Well, first of all, that was a long time ago. Most of you probably weren't even born then, but I went through pilot training in 1959, and this was as Harold said, the first airplane. It was a civilian contract program in those days. Everybody started, the first 6 months of pilot training was done by civilians, and they were superb. They were older guys that had rich experience. Some of them had been instructing since the 30s, been teaching military pilots since the 30s and the 40s and World War II and up through the Korean War. Some of them were young fellows that had been in World War II and were aces or had three or four kills. We didn't know the treasure that we really had. These guys were terrific. And they didn't last much longer until after I left pilot training in the early 60s. The Air Force did away with that for the simple reason that they, even though they were rich, experienced pilots, they were not deployable, and we were getting ready to do a war where the whole pilot pool needed to be made available for that war. At any rate, my instructor, a gentleman had been a B-29 pilot in World War II, asked me in the beginning, he said, where do you come from and how'd you grow up? And I said, I'm a farm boy from Iowa. And he said, you drive tractors and you drive corn pickers and all that sort of thing. And I said, yep. And he said, you won't have any trouble. He said, this is a machine, just like the things you're used to. And indeed it was. And when we finished that 30-hour program, that old man said, son, he said, I believe that's the only reason God gave you a right hand was that it one day would hold a stick. And the only reason he gave you a left hand is that one day it'd hold a throttle. He said, you're born to this. It was a great airplane. I loved it. And I don't have any wild stories. I have one little story about that T-34. I'll tell you that. Right at the end, the last day that I flew it, We were supposed to fly only a specific amount of time, which would round out that 30 hours exactly. So I went, I had an hour 20 or something I was supposed to fly. I went out and I got to doing aerobatics and some kind of low-level sightseeing, and we didn't buzz, but, and I lost track of time. And so the next thing you know, there's a call going out, you know, with my call sign, wondering where the hell I was. And I got, oh my God, and I was way overdue, and I went back and landed, and I thought, I'm in deep trouble, they'll throw me out or something. So my instructor grabbed me and he says, what are you doing? What are you doing out there? And I said, just practicing my maneuvers, sir. And he said, well, you're doing aerobatics. And I said, yes, sir. And he says, you're doing low-level flying. And I said, well, I wasn't breaking any rules. And he says, I like aerobatics too, son. You'll be all right.
I have a question for you. How many hours did you have before you soloed?
8, exactly.
And how many hours did your insurance company want you to fly before they gave you this one?
5. And my IP is sitting right over there.
Now, how did you... You were not an Air Force Academy grad.
No.
You came up a different way.
I was an aviation cadet. In those days, I didn't have a college degree, and you didn't... If you could pass the quiz and so forth, you could get into pilot training, and that's what I did. They stopped that program, maybe because of me, I don't know. But after I left, shortly thereafter, they did away with that aviation cadet program, and the Air Force was mad at me, and they sent me back to school, and I had to get a baccalaureate degree and a master's degree later on.
And you did that where?
University of Kansas.
Uh-huh. Now, what I happen to know, I'm a Baylor grad, and that's a Baptist school. He went there for 2 years before this. I haven't asked him what happened or how you left. And you might not want to say.
Well, I was an undistinguished student, and the only thing I really wanted to do was get into the Air Force and fly airplanes. And so, after a couple of years of that, I just said, if I can get into that program, that's what I'm going to do, and that's what I did, and I never looked back.
Very good. Now, the General's aircraft is the one to my right, your left, and if you'll notice on the cowl, it says Gray Eagle, and that's got a story too. Why don't you tell us?
The Gray Eagle is a distinction that is given to the longest-serving active pilot in the United States Air Force at any given moment. So over the last year and a half or 2 years that I was on active duty, I was the oldest guy around, the longest-serving pilot, and so I was the Gray Eagle. If you go in the Pentagon and up on the fourth floor outside the Chief of Staff's office, there's a great big glass case with a lovely big eagle there and the brass plaques of every man that's ever held that distinction. And each of us are given a small maquette of that at the time that we hold the distinction.
You know, I think it's interesting that you... Round of applause for that? Absolutely. I think it's interesting that you started out in this airplane and now it's your private airplane. Can you tell me how that happened?
Well, when I retired from the Air Force, I went to work in the civilian world immediately thereafter, and I maintained a pretty intense pace for the next 14 years. And at one point, a friend of mine, I didn't know anything about general aviation and had my mind on other things, but there's always, you can't be a pilot and love it as much as I did and ever get rid of that kind of that gnawing in your gut, you know? And so one of my friends who really understood that, I think, said, have you ever been to Oshkosh? And I said, no. And he said, well, I'm going to take you. I'll come by and pick you up in my airplane. We'll go up there. And this was in 2009. So we came up here and spent a couple of days in this absolute kaleidoscope of color and sound and emotion and what have you. And it just absolutely captivated me. And so as we left, the airplane came back in to pick us up at Fond du Lac, and I saw a little airplane, taxiing, the cutest little airplane you ever saw. And so I went over and talked to the guy, and he says, what's the name of this, and blah, blah, blah. Is there a dealer anywhere around where I live? Told him where I lived, and there was. So I went up there, and I went, so I'm just going to do this, you know. I don't have that many shopping days left till Christmas, and so I'm just going to get me one of these. Ordered it, took delivery of it. He checked me out, and I went out and I flew it home. And of course, as soon as I got away from the instructor, the first thing I wanted to do, I roll it, and I pulled the nose up, and the nose went down, and then, you know, in about 2 seconds later, we were up against the never exceed speed. And so I says, this isn't going to do. I flew it a little bit longer, and I sold it, and then I started looking around. I needed something that was military. I needed something that was aerobatic, something that had some meaning to me. And as I looked around, it ended up that the T-34 seemed to be the right thing. Dan Blackwell, whom some of you know, had one. I found out he had one for sale up in Pennsylvania. Went up to look at it. Beautiful airplane, gorgeous thing. I dithered too long, and when I called him back to see if I could meet him on a price, he said I sold it yesterday. So I started the search again and found another one up here in Wisconsin, and I went up to see the guy and took a ride and in the back seat. And he said, you want to fly? And I said, of course. And so I took the airplane. I flew it for 5 minutes, and I said, that's enough. Let's go back. And he says, you don't like it or what? I said, no. This is my airplane. It felt right. It's a, some of you know, it's a solid airplane. It's not a heavy airplane. It's a solid airplane, and it's honest, and it's military. The sticks where it belongs, and your right hand's on it, and the throttle's where it belongs. And so I was reminded that Thomas Wolfe in the 30s had a great novel, and he reminded us that you can't go home again. But he's wrong. He's wrong about that, at least in aviation. This airplane's home for me. It's where I started. It's undoubtedly the last airplane I'll ever own. It's a bookend. It's the other bookend on my life in aviation, and it's Chuck Boyd's airplane. That's all I
have. Thank you so much. Jed, would you, Jed, real quick?
Here, give that to him.
Here?
Yeah, just give it. Go ahead, give him the mic.
The T-34 in the civilian world has been around for some time. There have been several shops that have had a lot to do with restoring them, with maintaining them, with keeping them going. Charlie Nogle probably gets as much credit as anyone for making the T-34 into the warbird it is today. His son Judd carries on that tradition. Judd Nogle.
Hi there.
You grew up with this.
I've been around T-34 since I was probably 3 or 4 years old.
Yeah. And, you know, the 34 community's been through some hard times over the last 10 years. I think we're pretty much past all that. And you know, tell us a little bit about what that was about and what happened and how we fixed it.
We spent the last 11 years now since April of 1999 when an air combat school down in Atlanta, Georgia was using the airplane for mock aerial combat and lost a wing in flight. Since then, we've had two more of those accidents, both with mock aerial combat missions, and we have literally been fighting with the FAA since
there you go.
1999 through about last December, getting the fixes approved to satisfy the FAA for any airworthiness concerns that they thought that we had. As a result, we have two airworthiness directives, one that was done in 2001 and one that was done in 2004, that require extensive modifications and inspections of both the main wings and the carry-through structure that goes between the wings.
And you know, at least as I understand it, these guys were diving each other and merging. And as they came to the merge, they're doing about 170 knots, which is in the yellow zone for this aircraft, and then pulling to the buffet. So what would happen is you'd cycle to well above 6.5 Gs, about 8 hertz, 8 times a second. So you overloaded the airplane 8 times a second for many minutes a day, and it finally failed a few years later. So in my opinion, it's a really strong airplane, and it's a stronger airplane now.
Yeah. And just doing it with the buffet there, I was just adding insult to injury. But right. It wasn't like they took an airplane off the ramp and went out and pulled the wings off of it. All three airplanes had over 4,000 hours of air combat experience, simulated air combat experience, before they actually had any failures.
So, anything else you can tell us?
Any questions? Be happy to answer any questions anybody might have.